Hello, everyone. Welcome to Education Buzz, our District 50 podcast, where we talk to people in and around the educational community and in Harvard. And today we have a really special treat for all of you. And I want to thank everyone that has subscribed to the podcast and been listening. We didn't really know what this might become, but it's become something special. And we have a special treat here at the start of June, where we're going to talk to Dr. Richard Crosby. And it is an honor to talk to someone like Dr. Crosby, who has really seen a lot of Harvard District 50 through many different angles. And Dr. Crosby, I'm going to go out on a limb and saying this is your first guest in a podcast. Am I right?
You are so correct, Dr. Tafoya.
That's right. Well, thanks for joining us. This is really a treat for me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
So we have prepared for this a little bit, and I kind of lovingly teased Dr. Crosby that we've never had a guest quite so prepared. And that's one of the things that I would tell people when they ask about you. They say he is very prepared with whatever he does. He's going to be thoughtful and really do things the right way. So thanks for all your preparations, but let's just jump right into it. And I've told a few people that we were going to do this, and people got really excited just to kind of hear of some of the things that have been your experiences through Harvard. And why don't you just, by way of an introduction, explain to everyone a little bit about your background and your family life, and introduce anyone that might be living under a rock and might not have known Dr. Crosby very well.
Okay, well, very good, Dr. Tafoya. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, I was raised on in around Annawan, Illinois, on a rural farm, family farm, the oldest of five sons, and a fifth generation farm boy. While growing up, I assisted on our family farm, as well as had several jobs in the area working on farms.
Okay.
For a grain elevator, for the Illinois Department of Conservation, and at a state park across from our farm.
Oh, okay. What's the name of the state park?
Johnson Sauk Trail.
Okay, S-A-U-K?
Yes, U-K.
Okay, yeah.
And it was named after the Sauk Indians. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Annawan High School mascot was the Annawan Braves.
Oh, okay.
And so I attended Annawan High School. While in high school, I participated in football, basketball, track, chorus, drama, student council, yearbook, and FFA.
So was it a big graduating class? It's a smaller school, right?
Oh, yes. It was a smaller school, and I had a graduating class of 34.
Okay. Well, my mom's graduating class is about the same number, and she always said that her school was so small she had to sing both soprano and alto.
Well, that was about the case with me also, yeah, that's for sure.
The same
but
story.
It was great, and class, and got along well, and had a lot of successes, and a lot of people have gone on to be very successful.
So when you are finishing up with high school, did you already kind of think that you were going to go into education, or were you going to be on the farm, or how did education start into your world as a profession?
You know, I guess education, I really didn't know what I was going to be doing, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things. And so about half of our class went to Western Illinois University, which I did. Mm-hmm. And half of the others who had gone to college went to Northern Illinois University. And then there were a few others who went to some other colleges, but for the most part, mm-hmm. Those were the two major colleges that people had gone to. So probably I was really impressed with a high school social studies teacher and coach. Mm-hmm. And so I guess through that process, I just had gone to college. I majored in agriculture, of which mm-hmm. I almost have a major in ag myself. Oh. But I then graduated, though, with a degree in elementary education.
Oh.
With an ag minor.
Wow.
And a psych emphasis.
Oh, geez.
Psychology. Yeah, right. I mean, what a common.
Yeah.
So anyway, I finally lit on that, and then we lived six blocks from the school in which I taught in Macomb.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And two blocks from campus. So graduate work was not a real strain to get to as far as having
right
to
care.
I was right there. I'd come home and change clothes or do whatever and then go off to class.
Right.
So that worked out really well. Yes.
So during those times, was there still a farm that you were able to, did you go back to the family farm or did you get to meet some local farmers that you kind of helped in the summer or how did you keep connected to farming? Because I know even to this day, you're still involved in things. So I'm sure there was a little part of you that had that need to be on the farm a little bit.
Right, for sure. Well, eventually then after a couple of years, I married Jackie who had gone to Annawan High School also.
Oh, okay.
And so then from there in college, we came home a number of weekends. So I was the oldest of the five boys.
Mm-hmm.
So the next oldest brother was a couple years behind me and he had gone to a trade school in Chicago and wasn't home very much. And then he went into the service.
Oh.
And then we had a 5-year gap between the next boys. So mm-hmm. I would go home and help on the weekends to help my folks on the farm.
Right.
But then eventually I did get a job around the Macomb area.
Okay. And that was your first teaching job?
Yes, or it was.
First
teaching job, yes.
Oh, what a thrill, though. I could still remember the thrill of my first teaching job. Yeah, that's special.
I mean, it was great. They had like three different K-6 buildings in Macomb at that time. So, yes, I taught at one that was closest to where we lived. And, yes, I have fond memories of Wilson School in Macomb.
Wilson School. And what grade was that?
Well, I had 4th through 6th grade.
We were 4th through 6th grade.
A non-graded, so to speak, school.
Oh, okay.
And had moved in that direction.
Yeah.
And then I was able to have access as a teacher to a lot of the prospective teachers who were trying to get their clinical time in, and then student teachers. We had lots of student teachers.
In the university town, right, yeah.
Yes, for sure, yes. So that was a real great source to tap on what was really going on currently in education with them.
So at that time, Dr. Crosby, was it now, I mean, we have probably, I don't know, 80-20 or 90-10 at the lower grades, female to male teachers. Was it a little bit more balanced at that time, or were you as a male teacher on the lower grades a little bit on the smaller side of the ratio?
Well, I'd say I was the only male except for the principal at Wilson School. So there were probably 15 teachers there, plus all the itinerant people who came in. So yes, I was the only male.
Yeah. So at that point, did you do any coaching things? Because you had the athletic background too. Did you get drug into some coaching or did you pretty much just take grad school and spend time with your new bride?
Right, exactly. Well, we sure did that. It was a K-5 building or K-6, but they didn't start athletics until 7th grade. That's a junior high. So I was pretty focused on going forward there with a master's degree since we were so close to the university. And Jackie did the same.
Oh, that's smart. So where was she working at the time?
Well, she was a grad assistant. Well, she worked in a financial aid's office there at the university for the first 4 years. And then for grad school, she worked as a teacher assistant.
Oh, wow. So you guys were kind of immediately wrapped up in the educational world there together.
Yes, we were.
Good.
Yes, we were.
So then at some point you hear that there's a job in Harvard or McHenry. Was it McHenry first?
McHenry first.
That's right.
But there, you know, in Macomb, though, during the summers and Saturdays, I was a carpenter, a sider, and a painter for a large condo development that was going up. So during those 3 years during grad school, I had plenty of work if I wanted it.
Sure.
You know, they're building those condos. And then it was time there. Jackie was ready to go out to get a full-time teaching job.
Mm-hmm.
And being a home ec major at that time, most of the home ec jobs around a 30, 40-mile radius were pretty much taken up professors-wise and, you know, things like that. So anyway, we decided that we were going to move wherever. So I started interviewing and interviewed in McHenry to open up a new school in McHenry called the Parkland School.
Okay.
It was in 1971.
Right, 1971. And there it still sits kind of on 120 and right as you go into
Ringwood Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's the as it opened.
Yes, right. Oh. Well, you know, the first day that I came to work, they started me like August 1st. And how I got that job is I interviewed for or I applied for it. And I had been applying for a number of jobs at that spring. And so I drove from an area down around Macomb that I'd interviewed at up to Anawan. And then Jackie stayed back with the two kids at home.
Okay.
And so then my brother, who had just gotten out of the service at that time, he went along with me up to McHenry. And so along the way, my radiator starts.
Oh no.
And so we kept limping along. We finally get to Rochelle. Mm-hmm. And at Rochelle, at 6 o'clock in the morning, we go out to a John Deere dealership out in the country and gonna put a new hose on the radiator. Well, it wasn't a spring loaded radiator hose. So every time you pressed on the gas, it would collapse. The hose would, you know, suck up and
right.
It was terrible. So I call, so it's getting to be 7:30. I call McKinney and I say, you know, I know you're going to think I'm pretty something, but I said, I am stalled here in Rochelle, Illinois. And so they said, well, don't worry about it. Get here when you can. So we limped around finally and got to Crystal Lake. And in Crystal Lake, they flushed my radiator out.
Oh, okay.
So I could only go like 2 miles, you know, and then I had to stop, let it cool off. And that was crazy. Right. So I finally got there about 3:30 in the afternoon. Anyway, they called and offered me the job. But I was over there for 2 years and really enjoyed that. But I was looking to get into a principalship.
Yeah.
And you know, they talk about the 7-year itch. Well, I was into a 2 to 3 year itch.
And, right.
Move on. So anyway, we I interviewed in Harvard then. So I applied for a dual principalship.
Okay.
Cover both Central and Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
So when I came to Harvard, I interviewed for Harvard, the superintendent at the time. Well, this is how things have changed, you know. He offers me a cigar.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I thought, well, you know, I don't think I better do that.
Right.
I passed on that. But
Wow.
We interviewed, had a great interview. Mm-hmm. He was a farm boy himself. And so anyway, that was on a Friday. So they invited me back on a Monday to offer me the job.
Sure.
So, but over the weekend, we had driven over to Harvard, taking Route 14.
Right.
And, you know, what a spectacular view that was at night, coming back from Woodstock, around Woodstock,
yeah,
coming toward Harbin, as you come around the curve there, and you look over to the right and you see Harbin with all the lights.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really impressive.
Still remember that moment, seeing it.
Yes, we do. You know, and we knew that they had the five schools, you know, a mm-hmm. hospital, yep, swimming pool, the train station,
right,
and that the district encompassed, you know, 106 square miles.
Right.
So all that was very impressive. But the thing that really impressed us the most is that when I came for the interview on the Monday with the superintendent, he said, "Hey, why don't you just go up to the high school? We're going to watch the high school band chaperones be sent off to Vienna, Austria."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Here the band director is up on the stairs there on the north side of the high school. And here all the buses, school buses, all lined up. And the kids were all getting loaded on. And they were going to Vienna.
Jeez.
And was so impressed with the support that the Harvard community,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and the achievement by the high school band.
Yeah.
This was a fantastic introduction to the Harvard School District.
Yeah. And that was what, 1973?
That was 1973.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. And so, yeah, what, I mean, Vienna, even when you think of Vienna, you think of music. And so just to send mm-hmm. a band there, you must have been just like, wow, this is quite a place, and I'm being welcomed.
The amount of money, exactly, and the, mm-hmm. the fundraising that had to have taken place.
Oh, you know, considerably, right. Yeah.
And how they supported that. So, yeah.
Wow. So then how did that work? Was a split responsibility between both Central School and Jefferson? What were the grade configurations, and how did you manage your time between those two roles?
Well, you know, it was always a funny thing because they'd call me at one place and, oh, he's in between.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was always one of those things. But
right,
how I did that, well, at Central, we had kindergarten through third grade.
Okay.
But we also had kindergarten through third grade at Washington. And at Jefferson, we also had some third, fourth, and fifth.
Mm,
so there were a few third graders there at Jefferson, too. So at Jefferson, it was basically third, fourth, and fifth
Jefferson. I see. Okay.
So that's how that was. And then, you know, I went by the need primarily.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'd see, you know, where the most, you know, the issues were, or I would try to do every other day. And
sure.
then I started doing a half a day at each school.
Yeah.
I'd most generally start out at Central, and then I'd switch over to
right.
Jefferson. But depending on whichever school, I was going to have a staff meeting or mm-hmm. et cetera.
Right.
So wherever the need was at that time.
Wow. Now, so, during those years, were your own children, did they come through the buildings? Were you their principal at any point?
Yes, quite a bit, for sure. you know, 2 months after we had purchased the building trades house number 4.
Okay.
Because the night that I was hired for the school district, item 5, say, was the hiring of the principal
mm-hmm.
for these two schools. And then I think item number 7 or 8 was the selling of the building trades house number 4.
Oh.
And so Jackie and I, it was a closed seal bid.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 6 other bidders then, I guess, as we found out later.
Wow.
But, you know, that's spent our time there for a month, month and a half trying to find a home.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to keep commuting from Ringwood, right, and we wanted to live in the district. So as we went along, Michelle actually started kindergarten at the junior high 2 months after we moved to Harvard.
Oh, really? Okay.
So the kids, although she had been enrolled at McHenry, which is a deal, but she was already enrolled, but then we moved. And so she enrolled and started kindergarten in Harvard in the fall of the year.
Oh, wow.
And then Brian, he followed 2 years later.
Wow. So any memories of having your own kids in your schools? I've had some friends who've done that, and they said, you know, 90% of it's a blessing. There's some parts where it's just more for the kids, a little bit awkward. But when you do that in a town like Harvard, we all know each other pretty well. I mean, that's one of the blessings of being in a community like ours, is that you have that support and that, you know, kind of that feels like an extended family. So any memories of seeing your own kid on the playground or around the corner, you know, throwing snowballs?
Yes. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, there's always a little downside to that. Yeah. A little bit more of a helicopter dad, so to speak. But for the most part, I believe I attempted to keep my distance, so to speak. But it was interesting, by the time I got to junior high, because I went through Central and Jefferson, mm-hmm. and I was there for 5 years. And so both kids had already been in school. They'd already at Jefferson.
Yep.
And Brian being in third and Michelle in fifth. So then when we moved to the junior high, same thing. But then when it came time for Michelle to move to the high school, her friends were saying, "Hey, is your dad going to go to the high school with us too?"
Right.
I mean, I think it was a great experience. The thing that was really nice is that being in the community, I was able to get to all the kids' activities in town at the time, and didn't have to leave work because most of the events started at 4 o'clock. And then I, although I was at the junior high, I was also in charge of transportation. I was around the office area there and being able to participate and watch the kids participate in different activities. So, and looking back, I believe it worked out, although there was some consternation, I'm sure, from the kids at times. I realize that. But for the most part, I tried to stay pretty much out of their business, so to speak,
during that time. That's some friends of mine that have done that same thing, said, you stay out of each other's and you just kind of smile and give each other a little wave. And before mm-hmm. When I left the principalship, it was a similar story. I had interviewed in Crystal Lake in 155 where Michelle works. And so it was kind of all in the works. And my daughter was an eighth grader at that point, and she came home the day before I was going to get accepted by the school board in Crystal Lake. She came up to me after dinner and said, "Dad, are you ever going to like take a different job or maybe go to a different place, you think?" And it was the day after their eighth grade night or something like that. I said, "Well, why do you ask?" "Oh no, I just wondering." And so the next night we went to be introduced. I said, "Cameron, you asked, me to get a new job." And I did. I mean, I didn't tell her, of course, it's been going on for 2 or 3 months of the process. She's like, "No, you don't have to. I know you love that job." And so it was kind of our running joke that I did this for you. What are you talking about? But that is special to be able to contribute to something that your children are going to benefit from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah. So then that puts you at the junior high. How many years mm-hmm. were you at the junior high?
I was at the junior high 9 years.
Okay, that's longer than 7-year itch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so 2 months or a month or so after I had been selected for the junior high, I received a letter from the board or through the superintendent indicating that part of my duties, I was going to be the director of transportation.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. For the district, a position that I held for the next 21 years.
Actually, wow.
I had already qualified as a bus driver.
Okay.
Because we were having difficulties at Central and Jefferson and Washington too, getting bus drivers at that time. And so at that time, all you had to do is get your physical, and you could go down to the motor vehicle mm-hmm. and go off for a bus driving test and get your license.
Oh wow!
You know, anymore, you have to go through quite a process, with classes and things mm-hmm. like that. But at that time, there wasn't much to getting a bus driver's license. So. Anyway, I did that at the junior high there for 9 years. Yeah, for
sure. Jeez. And so at any point, did you only have solitary responsibility for transportation, or was it always transportation and the building, or when did you kind of become out of that building principal role?
Well, 9 years later, but during that time, that 9 years, right off the bat, I was director of transportation also. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I was also in charge of maintenance for the district. I was the overseer, the contact person for maintenance. And then I was also, we started to satellite our meals out of the high school to Central and the junior high. The junior high had never had a cafeteria, so to speak, other than the infrared sandwiches.
Oh, okay.
So they would have the infrared sandwiches, mass feeding or something, I think it was. And so anyway, we had that. And then also I became involved because we did not have a special ed department where we had someone who could type.
Oh, really?
All the reports and do all the scheduling for all the staff and special ed, all the special ed and psychologists, social workers, etc.
Right.
So and I oversaw that for probably 4 years also during that time.
Wow.
And then before
how many hats can they put on one guy?
Well, you know, there is that, but I guess I was hungry for it. To be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, you're young. You're wanting to show what you can do. You wanted as many experiences. So the experiences were there. So then I gladly took those experiences on.
Yep. It when you think about those things, there's these points where you're like, wow, boy, that's a little bit more. But then you kind of get into it and see the benefit of these things to the people around you, and they appreciate it. And yeah, you just take it on and you don't think really about it.
Right, right.
So during those times, was Jackie a teacher in the area, or where was her educational path?
Well, she was pretty much, she started out, in McHenry when we were over there, she got a job in Spring Grove. So she was in Spring Grove for 5-6 years. And then she moved over to McHenry. Mm-hmm. Took a job over at McHenry and was there for, I think, 9 years or, no, 18 years, actually. 18 years in McHenry.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a career, too.
Yeah, right. She was there, and then she applied for Cary 26 as the director of curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
So she was in Cary for 16 years.
Wow, that's...
Yeah.
Quite a career.
And then superintendent.
Yeah. There. Wow. You guys must have had some incredible stories between all the things you were wrapped up in.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, in the busy lives you lead as an administrator, you're just kind of coming and going like just a nonstop pace. That must have been a really fascinating life. And I suppose Jackie really appreciated you being in Harvard where the kids were, because I'm sure you picked up some of the slack in some ways being closer. If one was sick, you know, you were there to, you know, pick some up from the nurse's office and some of that.
Right. Right. But she, when the kids were smaller, I mean, she went to all the out of town events.
Yep.
Because right. I just didn't, during the junior high years, I went to the at home events, but the out-of-town events, except for Friday night and the weekends, I did not.
Right.
Because of, you know, responsibilities. But she was able to do that. And then she took care of the house. And
yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a busy person. Person with a lot of energy. Yep.
Yeah. Well, she just accomplishes so much. It's fun. So then at what point were... There must have been a transition then out of the junior high principal and away from those dual roles as transportation and junior high. How did that next transition go?
Well, the superintendent was retiring. Mm-hmm. So I applied for the position was interviewed on a Saturday afternoon by the board. And that same spring in 78, or that was in, that was, let's see, 87, I should say, 87. So anyway, I did keep the transportation.
Yeah.
As I went along. And so anyway, I was really eager to see what I could do. I was encouraged to apply for the superintendency, which I did. So that's, yeah, it was a great, after 14 years, I then served an additional 12 years in as superintendent at that time.
Right. From 87, for another 12 years.
Right. Right. So then at that time, I still had the transportation, the cafe, in the cafeteria also.
Right, right. Well, that that is quite a story, though, from just coming in and saying, I'm going to be this dual principal and just taking things on to superintendent. So what was the year that you were stopped as superintendent? What year was that? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. That was in 1999. July 1999, and we were in negotiations with the support staff. And so, I mean, it was just, it was so, it was something that, you know, you always want to get it done, right?
Yes.
Oh. So, so anyway, we were there till midnight because we, because I was going off and it was going to be July 1st the next day.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, we negotiated right up to midnight. We actually probably went into the next day also finishing it up.
You worked for free for a day, huh?
So, you know, it was a, it, it was great. It was a great you know, group to negotiate with.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, I might add, too, that I was so fortunate that both in negotiations with the support staff and the teaching staff throughout the years, some were tough, but all through the negotiations, working with the, both unions, I mean, it was definitely, as you look back, a pleasure. Everyone wanted what was going to be best for the kids, and everyone was reasonable in the amount that they were asking for. And while a lot of negotiations went on and went on into the next year, it was still productive, and I never saw it as being protracted.
Yeah. In the end, it is a very rewarding experience because you usually come to something that feels fair and both sides really have been heard. And it always takes a little longer than you want because you're, you know, there's other things you want to get to, but it's hardly anything's more important than having that, just those things. And so I guess through the decades, that's a, maybe a good segue, Dr. Crosby, as you kind of made that kind of comparison over the, what were some of the things when, since you arrived in 71, you had a great view of Harvard District 50 in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And you still, here we are in 2020, still an integral role as a member of our school board. What are some memories of just some of those decades and some of the things that you saw come and go through the years, or some of your memories of the maybe the best of times, some of the high points that happened over the things you saw? I mean, you mentioned the seeing the band sent off to Austria. There's got to be some other things that you thought, man, that was just a really special thing to be a part of.
I'd say probably in 1980, we saw the building of the track and a rock wall, where the community got behind on the south side of the track, south end of the track there. They put up a monstrous rock wall. The community members, farmers, and construction workers with their backhoes went out into the country. And farmers had volunteered to give away their big boulders and things that they had that were in the ground out in the country, and to pluck those out with the backhoes and then put them on the trailers, and then to bring them into the track and dumped them there, and then they had to be stacked. That was a great undertaking.
Yeah.
You know, wow. I think in 84, we added propane to our buses.
Oh.
I know that wasn't really a big deal, I guess, but yet it was financially, because at that time we paid for all the equipment for converting all of our buses, or not converting, but putting an additional propellant on the buses with propane. So then we could go 400 miles or more with a bus.
Holy cow.
With both gas and propane. And the differential between the price of gasoline and propane was, it was like, I don't know, 70 cents spread.
Oh, wow.
And so you may have gotten a mile or two less with the propane per mm-hmm. mile or per gallon. But for the most part, we had everything paid for in the first year. So we had had the propane probably for 9-10 years. But then the differential started to get so narrow.
Oh, right.
That, and then the cost to replace the equipment was coming time for that to be done. So then we just went back to the gasoline. We never did go propane during my time, because that was another $12,000 or so.
Oh, wow.
Per bus. And so we were not in the position at that time to be able to turn our buses over.
Yeah.
You know, they were like 10-year-old buses. I mean, we were trying to get to a 5-year schedule.
Right.
Depreciation. But for the most part, you know, that was tough. Now, some of the other, you know, the budget, say, for instance, in 87. The budget in 87 was $12.5 million.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And today we're at 40.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, just think. I mean, just how things have
37 gone. Years difference, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how that has gone since 87. And then 87 there we received word that Walmart was coming to town.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that, you know, it had the pros and cons, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been a good neighbor.
Yes, I agree.
Over the years.
Yeah.
The in 88, the developer impact fees were passed in the county. Mm-hmm. It was at the county level. We still hadn't done it that was only in the metes and bounds out in the country. It wasn't mm-hmm. for Harvard proper.
Okay.
So that would have to be done by the city council, which was done, and a couple of years later the city council did and it was pretty much right along with what the county board had gone along with. So then at that time we both had impact fees from both through the city and through the county also.
So that's a nice supplement to the district's budget then, for sure. Get you through some lean times.
Oh, awesome. And then, as well, I'll get into it a little bit later here, you'll see how we were able to use that. Mm. In 88, also, this boost through the Booster Club replaced the old bleachers that had been at the high school since 1956.
Oh, wow.
So we could have been in the new gym, I should say, the South Gym. And so the Booster Club got behind that, and we were able to replace the bleachers. You know how bleachers get if you don't have a motor on them anymore.
Yeah.
You had 4 or 5 people on the front of the bleachers pushing and pulling those bleachers.
Yep. Right.
And they would get sprung. One side would be going faster than the other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a sight to see, both there and the junior high.
Wow.
Soccer began in 88.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah, for boys.
Yeah.
We had a YSO was really big mm-hmm. here in Harvard.
Yep.
And so they were very instrumental in getting that going here in the schools. So in 88. And then the girls, I think, followed a couple years later, because we did have some girls playing on the
boys. Was it right away a high school sanctioned sport? Or was it a club, or did it start right away as a high school sport with a state tournament?
It was a sport right away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow.
At that point, with the school. And then 1990, we had the passage of an education fund rate, because we were going through some pretty hard times in 90.
90, okay.
In 90. So, at that time also, we had the VIVA program was started, and that was volunteers in the visual arts.
Oh.
And that was very successful during the 90s. And Mr. Lehman at the Harvard State Bank was very instrumental in donating prints of famous artists throughout the school. So you see all the artists'
Some pictures of those are still in central office. Yeah.
Yes, they are at the board office.
Those are from Mr. Lehman.
Yes, they are from the Harvard State Bank. So that was, and he did that for all the buildings.
Yeah.
But we also had a lot of those there, and we still have them at the board office. In 1993, another interesting time for us is that we were looking for space, as we were always looking for space to money in the district.
Yeah.
So in 1993, I mean, we were bulging. Particularly at the elementary level, because at the high school in 73, when I came, we had open campus. We had to go to open campus in 1973. Over the years, through 88, our enrollment dropped to 1450.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's... So there in the late 80s, or actually late 70s, when we came to town, a lot of people were moving out from the suburbs. And and that particular year that I became the principal at Jefferson in 73, we had an additional 34 fourth graders that they had not anticipated having in the district that particular year. Holy. That was in 73.
Wow.
So that was a major impact at that time as far as, and then of course we were at 2,100 students too. So by 88, we had dropped to 1450 in the district, because people then decided that commuting was not cutting it. You know, they just couldn't afford to commute and live out here. So, but then the population by 93 was starting to pick up again.
Yep.
And we had over $200,000 in impact fees that had already been collected by that time. And so we were going to have plans. We already had it on the drawing board and had already sent bids out actually to build the three classrooms to the far western part of Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
Hart Street.
Yep.
So those three southernmost classrooms were going to be built regardless of a referendum or not.
Oh, wow.
They were going to be paid for because the impact fees.
The impact fees had done that.
Right. Could only use to be used for building. So at the same time, that spring, the stakeholders in Harvard passed a building referendum for construction to add those, to go along with the three classrooms that were being paid for by the impact fees. So that, not only for Jefferson, but for the junior high and high school also. That was in 93. Yeah.
Okay.
So because we were bursting at the seams everywhere. And so, and we had tried a number of times. The community was telling us, build on the ground that you have, do not be going out and buying more property to build.
Okay.
So that's why this referendum passed in a major part, because we were building on
the ground
that, the current land that we owned.
Yeah.
And that we were taking care of Jefferson Junior High and the high school.
Oh, yeah.
So that was 30 classrooms, two gymnasiums, and one learning center.
Jeez.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge undertaking.
Big moment, because then at that point you were overseeing grounds as well as a superintendent responsibility. So you were wrapped up in that in every way possible.
Right, right. Now that one there was now as far as we had a person who oversaw a coordinator of facilities, but then they came to me as a person to the coordinate the different programs.
Yeah.
So yes, that was quite an experience with what I had there with building on to those three schools.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, another highlight, I believe, were the board briefs in 93-94. After each board meeting, minutes were typed and then distributed. Our courier then took them around town to the different locations.
Yeah,
and then sent, you know, so people could see what was going
on. See the progress. The yeah, right. Mm-hmm. The fruits of the labor of the vote of that referendum, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And then in 94, the spring of 94, we found out that Motorola was coming to town.
Yeah.
That was the other big highlight.
Yes.
And all the anticipation of that and the visits that they took busloads over to Libertyville to see their plant over there.
Uh-huh.
And then That was huge that we had won that fight, so to speak, to get that here in Harvard.
Yeah.
By the time the Motorola was about ready to be opened up in 97, they said, well, you know what, we're going to give that off of Harvard Hills Road, we're going to give that 75 acres or 70 some acres to the city, of which the city is to give to the school district half of that 35 acres.
Okay.
So that's how we got that 35 acres and the land that we have up on Harvard Hills Road.
Right.
Now the first year we did maintain that, mowing it to keep the weeds down, things like that. But then after that, the alumni, the FFA alumni then came in and they said, we will take care of that piece of property. And then the funds that were made from Harvard Hills then were turned over to the Ag and FFA programs.
I was going to ask when that had started, because your agricultural kind of background would always kind of lead you back to find ways to help kids that were doing that. And that's still a proud part of our district, that FFA
is still
being taken care of by our alumni group.
Yes, they are. It's just great to be able to maintain that with the schools. And then the kids being able to, over the years, they've been able to help, you know, help with some of the planning of what was to go into the crops and then how the money was to be spent. You know, definitely then at that same time in 94 or so, I guess, in 97, when they were about ready to open it up, they had given us the ground and they also had given the school district $100,000 to be put toward computers.
Oh, wow.
For computer labs. So then we were able to bring the computers, you know, into being. So that's how we were able to get computers into the schools. And
wow, so that was the initial round of the lab through that seed money from Motorola.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow. Yep. So yeah, that was about the time where pretty much you had to provide kids some type of exposure that felt like, you know, a part of the curriculum almost, that was something, it wasn't just an experience where I remember early on going to a computer lab and there'd be three of us around a computer just kind of watching what it did to learn the function of it. But that was kind of the point where it felt like one of the obligations of the district that you should expose kids to that, because certainly it was going to in their future would be involving a computer in some way.
Exactly. And at that time it was getting into the offices also.
Yep.
And so then we were having a person from MCC come in, and then we had a couple of teachers in the district then who were instrumental in getting this moving also.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Just that whole move.
Oh, that was, you know, that was fabulous. And just look at where we're at. Every student in the school district now has a laptop,
right. Or
a Chromebook.
Yep.
Right. And staff also.
Yeah.
Another interesting, I think, phenomenon was music on wheels.
Oh.
We had to cut the art and the music back. And so then Pat Fisher was very instrumental in getting the music on wheels in 1994, where they had the Yamaha types of musical instruments on the bus outfitted. The Kunert brothers out of McHenry had brought the bus and furnished the bus with these instruments. And then the music teachers then would be parked at each of the schools. Yeah. And then the kids would then come out to the music bus for music.
Wow. Well, that
was music on wheels.
You know, and I would, before we take a little break here, I just was that, you know, educators are so creative. That's one of the things that I probably, just that idea right there shows just the willingness where there's some idea to help kids. They're boundless in their efforts to kind of find creative ways to help kids. And so, why don't we take a little pause here, and then we're going to come back with Dr. Crosby and finish up some other recollections of the district here on our Education Buzz podcast.